Committee will come to order. Welcome to the last Education Committee, and yay. What did you do?
Nothing.
We'll call the roll.
Chairman Tribe.
Here. Senator Anderson. Senator Davison.
Here.
Senator Eberle.
Here.
Senator Flackel.
Present.
Senator Heckman.
Here.
Senator Marshley.
Here.
Senator Oban.
Here.
Senator Poolman.
Here.
Senator Rust. Representative Nathy.
Here.
Representative Holman will not be in attendance today. Representative Hunsker.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Kelsch.
Here.
Representative Lason. Representative Meyer.
Here.
Representative Munson, I have word, also will not be here today. Representative Rohr.
Here.
Representative Sanford.
Here.
Representative Schreiber-Beck.
Here.
Representative Wallman. Representative Zupke.
Here.
We have quorum. Thank you. Consider the minutes of our last meeting. Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? Meyer and then Rohr. We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as submitted. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carried. I guess the only comment I have, I'd like to congratulate Senator Marshley on his induction to the Wall of Honor in a historical. That's quite an honor, so thank you. With that, we move on to our 10-10 item of a presentation by Kirsten Basler regarding our Every Student Succeed Act and North Dakota Task Force. Morning.
Good morning, Chairman Scheibele, members of the committee. For purposes of clarification, I have two different testimonies. There's two different items, so I separated them rather than trying to. They're heavy topics, complex topics, so I separated them. I'll start with the first item, which is everybody's funnest thing to talk about, and that's testing and assessment. So I will hand these out. I'll get one time. Chairman Scheibele and members of the Legislative Interim Education Committee, my name is Kirsten Basler, North Dakota Superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction. I am here today to provide the results of the statewide assessment task force that was convened last fall. I will also provide an update on the work being done to write a state accountability plan for the new federal education law called Every Student Succeeds Act. The North Dakota Assessment Task Force was formed to provide input for the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction as it selects the state assessment system for North Dakota's K-12 students. The assessment system will be selected in 2017 with implementation scheduled for the spring of 2018. The objectives that have guided the work of the task force were: develop a foundational knowledge of assessment systems and practices, review past and current assessment practices in North Dakota, study assessment practices across the country, develop and submit a set of assessment recommendations to the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction that will guide the formation of a request for proposal for a 2018 state assessment system. The assessment task force had 33 members and included parents, home educators, legislators, business representatives, technology and assessment specialists, teachers, and administrators from public and non-public schools. A list of those members is attached. We had our first meeting a little more than a year ago, on September 3, 2015, and met seven times over the course of the year. Our seventh and last meeting was June 23, 2016. Over the course of the assessment task force meetings, a variety of speakers and educators have contributed to the discussion. The task force received reports from educators with a strong background in assessment and/or knowledge of assessment-related issues in North Dakota. Presenters included Education Commission of the States, assessment specialists from the Council of Chief State School Officers, Tommy Bice, who was the superintendent of public instruction from Alabama, with his focus of sharing Alabama's experience of having ACT as their state assessment. Paul Leather, the deputy commissioner of education from New Hampshire, with his focus being their innovative assessment pilot that New Hampshire is currently conducting. North Dakota Educators Panel, of a panel discussion. Lisa Johnson of the North Dakota University System, with her focus on the use of our state assessment and ACT scores for the North Dakota University System's admissions and course placement purposes. Achieve, whose focus was presenting their assessment audit model developed to help local school districts reduce the amount of testing that they conduct. As the task force concluded its work, recommendations were formulated. These recommendations will be included by the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction as it prepares its request for proposal this spring for its 2018 state assessment. The state has committed to the use of the Smarter Balanced Assessment for the 2016-17 school year to ensure continuity for schools across the state, to provide a minimum of 3 years of trending data for legislators, and to align the 2017 state assessment to the standards being taught during the 2016-17 school year. Meanwhile, a comprehensive standards review in the content areas of English language arts and math was initiated this June. This review, which involves educators from across the state, will conclude by March of 2017. At that time, an assessment RFP will be finalized to ensure that the future state assessment in North Dakota will be aligned with the revised content standards in the English language arts and math. The task force made recommendations in 7 areas: test administration and item type, comparability across schools, districts, and states, test length, standards alignment, reporting of results, accommodations, and high school testing requirements. Under the administration and item type, a majority of the task force members recommended that the state of North Dakota consider a hybrid state assessment that would combine items previously developed along with the integration of items. Items is questions. When we say items, we mean test questions. So along with the integration of items unique to North Dakota, this hybrid approach would provide input by educators across the state while maintaining some control over the expense of the annual assessment. The task force indicated its support for a mixture of multiple choice questions and questions known as constructive response. Constructive response questions involve a combination of short, medium, and long responses. These responses measure students' critical thinking and problem-solving skills. Comparability. The task force recommended that the state assessment should provide an opportunity for schools and districts to compare achievement results across the state of North Dakota. In addition, a majority of the task force members felt it was important for the test results to be used to compare the state of North Dakota with other states across the country. This would indicate support for a state assessment that combined common assessment questions that appear in assessments used by other states as well. Test length. The amount of time that students are involved in assessments has been a discussion point across the country. The task force also discussed this issue as it relates to North Dakota assessments. While much of the testing time is directed by the local school districts, the task force wanted to ensure that the future state assessment did not extend testing time beyond what was desired by educators, parents, and policymakers. Current testing time for the state assessment was estimated at about 8 hours per student. The task force recommended that the future state assessment be limited to 6 hours or less per student if possible. If the state should choose to move to more constructive response questions, it could impact the amount of time it would take for each student to complete the state assessment. Standards alignment. When the task force was faced with the question of whether the future state assessment should be based on our standards, meaning that questions could cover a range of grade level standards, or aligned to our standards, meaning that questions are specifically aligned to grade level standards within each grade level. The task force was split on its response. Some task force members supported a state assessment that is based on state content standards, which would allow educators to assess a student's knowledge over a range of grade levels, while a similar number of task force members saw the benefits in an assessment that was specifically aligned to North Dakota content standards at each grade level to ensure that they were being measured on what they were expected to be teaching that year. Reporting of results. The task force members advocated strongly for a prompt report on the results of the state assessment. Given the fact that the state assessment is given in the spring of each academic year, the results must be reported promptly to be of use to North Dakota educators. A majority of the task force members indicated a desire to have the results of the state assessment reported within a month of the final date of administration. Accommodations. The task force was clear to ensure that appropriate accommodations were considered for any students in need of testing accommodations for special learning needs. A more challenging accommodation related to providing the state assessment in alternate languages other than English. It was determined that while there was no objection to providing as many language accommodations as possible, there would need to be a limit on what a vendor could do at a reasonable price. Currently in our state, we have over 100 different languages other than English being spoken by our students in our schools. High school assessments. The new federal Every Student Succeeds Act allows each North Dakota school district to make its own decision on its high school assessment, rather than having one assessment for all North Dakota high schools decided by the state. State law does require that high school students take at least one statewide assessment in English, mathematics, and science. North Dakota law also requires 11th graders to take the ACT. The task force debated whether each local school district in North Dakota should have the ability to choose its own high school assessment, for example, choosing the state assessment or simply just delivering the ACT, versus having one statewide assessment determined for all North Dakota high schools. The task force was split in its view on this topic and did not come to consensus. The task force members agreed that the Department of Public Instruction should ensure that comparability could occur among high school assessment scores and should work with local school districts to determine an acceptable option for the decision for these high school assessments. During the course of the task force meetings, a new federal law was passed. The Every Student Succeeds Act will have an impact on how states respond to the accountability standards that are set for each school district. North Dakota has enjoyed strong academic achievement in the past, and the task force members were unified in their efforts to recommend criteria that would help to continue this rich academic tradition. As mentioned, in addition to the successful passage of ESSA, the Department of Public Instruction initiated the periodic content revision and update of its content standards in the areas of math, of English language arts and math. This review, which will conclude in the spring of 2017, will set an important foundation for the selection of the state assessment that will be used in North Dakota beginning in the spring of 2018. In conclusion, the North Dakota Assessment Task Force should be commended for its efforts. We have several that are on your committee here today. The task force members were diligent in their attendance and participation in the task force meetings. While the individual task force members did not agree on all issues, the collective group had frank and honest discussions about the purposes of the state assessment in North Dakota. Chairman Shively, members of the committee, that concludes my testimony of the Assessment Task Force Committee, and I am open to answer any questions on this topic before I begin my testimony on the Every Student Succeeds Act.
Ms. Baszler, I guess a couple questions. The trending data of our Smarter Balance assessment and going forward, how do we assure that, you know, they're going to be comparable and that we grow from that learning, or are they going to be so much different that that's going to cause us some trouble?
Chairman Shively, members of the committee, we will have 3 years of data to compare using the same assessment. We'll have 2000, 2015, 2016, 2017 data. So we'll have 3 years of trending data, which will be helpful. Going forward with a new assessment, after we deliver that new assessment in 2018, there are people out there called psychometricians that can actually do an analyzation of the test items and the test scores to give us not an exact, but it will be much of a reset. It will be somewhat of a reset, and we can have some sort of calibration, but it will not be exact.
Other question is, you're looking for bids on this testing, which will be an interactive test similar to what we have now. Ballpark, what's that going to cost, and what are we looking at?
The recommendation was to go into a hybrid, and so we're expecting that it would be more expensive than the current test that we are conducting, because it is a consortium and it's developed. The test items are already developed. So we will need to begin, again, resetting our and setting our own cut points, setting our own testing of the test items, if you will. So the cost will be increased than if had we stayed with our current assessment. But I'm not sure by how much. When I will be able to deliver that information to you once the RFP bids begin to come in.
Okay.
It would be a hybrid is going to be less expensive than a completely unique test.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Davison.
Mr. Chairman and Kirsten. So it was my understanding that at one point that we were moving our testing to the fall. When you're talking about spring of 2018, I'm assuming that you're saying we're still going to leave the testing in the spring. You know, one of the benefits. Is that true? We're still going to do spring testing?
Chairman Shively, Senator Davison, yes. The assessments that are being developed are going to be spring assessments.
Okay. I thought, and I could have been wrong, but I thought the discussion was to try to move that to the fall. And I mean, for example, if we have kids taking those assessments and they're getting those results as school's getting out, they've already decided what classes they're taking next year, that the teachers aren't as apt to use the data for those students because it's going to be data 6 months down the road. And so was there any discussion about moving that test to the fall so that data could be give us some better input to do interventions for students and help them plan their class load as they signed up for new classes in January for the next school year?
Chairman Shively, Senator Davison, the turnaround results for the results of our assessment this year, if a school finished their testing by the end of April, they received their results by the end of May. If they finished their results by the end of May, they received their results by the end of June. All of our school districts had their results in their hands by the end of June this year, June of 2016. So they are currently using their data to help kids get scheduled for classes. They did use those. They planned their professional development around those results. There was very little conversation. There may have been pockets of people saying we should go back to the fall, but that wasn't a general theme of what the task force had declared or indicated that they wanted. Administrators, there were some principals, specifically in high school, that believed that their high school was over-tested in the spring, but with, you know, the choices that have been opened up to them, there was, like as I said, passing conversation, but no general swell of that direction.
So there was never any discussion of fall, moving the test back to the fall?
There was a passing comment or two, but there...
No, I meant previous to the assessment task force. I thought there...
Well, we just recently... Right.
I thought there was some intention to move that to the fall.
We used previously, prior to Smarter Balance, we used to test in October.
All right.
So we used to test in October, and then there was the decision by educators to move it to the spring, and some people have declared... Some educators or principals have declared that they liked it better in the fall, but that wasn't the overwhelming sense.
Right.
So up until 2015, it was an October administration. In 15, we moved it to April.
Could you?
So with the in regards to the ACT test, if memory serves me, there was some conversation regarding whether that ACT test could be used as the statewide assessment test, and there was going to be some more investigation or some feedback from the federal government as whether ACT could be used? Where are those discussions at as far as does ACT qualify for the state assessment, or is that with the new legislation going to be our choice?
Chairman Shively, Senator Davison, there was discussion, there was conversation about ACT and whether it would meet the requirements of the federal government. That with the new legislation of Every Student Succeeds Act, that does certainly come into our decision. There still is a requirement that you must go through a peer review. Peer review meaning other states must take a look at your assessment and your standards and determine that it is close enough aligned in order to be accurately measuring what you're teaching, because you have to choose a test that is aligned to your standards. You can't align your standards to a test. And so if we're writing our standards right now based on what our teachers desire and what they believe is best for our students, and we will need to choose a test that is aligned to those. ACT will most likely put in a bid to be possibly our state assessment, 3 through 8 and grade 11. As I mentioned, the new federal law does allow, if Bismarck would want to use ACT as their assessment and Minot wanted to go with the state assessment, possibly, let's just say Questar, if we go with Questar, then that would be allowable. Bismarck could do it. But as we move into the conversation, it's about ACT, there's a lot more questions from our school districts that we're getting right now as we're writing this ESSA law of using an ACT as accountability. Yes, all of our students take the ACT test, and yes, they take it and they take it more seriously. But when a school district then has to say, oh, this is what we're actually getting measured on, and are we sure that we want to have all of our students, because we are still having students that get a 12, a 13, and is it aligned well enough to what our standards actually are to be an accurate measure? The other question is, those school districts as a state would need to say and determine what their cut score is of proficiency. So right now, it's 24 and 23 in different areas. So if that's what is, the ACT is declared as college ready, is that what we'd want to set our accountability score as, that we would measure the quality of our school, of our high school, meaning how many of our students are proficient if they reach a score of 22, 23? So when you start to talk about the ACT scores in the context of using that for reporting and accountability purposes, the conversation has changed just a little bit among our high schools.
So is the decision of whether to use, to recommend, give flexibility to schools to use whatever state assessment they want to, or to use one state assessment test, is that a legislative decision or a decision that comes from the Superintendent of Public Instruction?
That's a decision that will be made by our ESSA Planning Committee that will then be affirmed by the State Superintendent in the accountability plan.
So could you, so you talked about the standards. Let me get to my note. Could you give me an example of, on the comparability, you talked on the comparability about the, could you just give me an example within comparability of what that means a little bit more?
Certainly, and that was actually, we took a lot of time to have a conversation about that. So comparability, what level of comparability did our assessment task force want this test to determine, to be able to be used for? So comparability, they determined that they wanted it to be a test that would provide comparability and be able to be broken down so Flasher High School assessments could be compared with Gwinner High Schools or Richland County. They also wanted it to be drilled down even further than that Lewis and Clark Elementary School results could be compared with the Roosevelt Elementary School results within Mandan. Broader, they also wanted a test to be somewhat comparable to measure how North Dakota was doing in comparison to Minnesota, to New Mexico, to Iowa, to South Dakota. So in order for that to happen, the Assessment Task Force Committee understood that there needed to be some common items. And that's where they came up with the hybrid. In order to compare a one state to another, they needed to have some common assessment items.
You done?
I have a couple more if you really want to stick to them.
Representative Nathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask a question. You can go back to Senator Davison. You talked about the costs. So what are our costs now? And you said if with the comparability stuff, it would be more. Do you have a ballpark figure, percentage, how much more it would be than what we're currently paying?
Chairman Shively, Representative Nathy, currently the cost of our test is about $27 per student. We're looking at of a hybrid test where we have a more customized test that are with more questions created by North Dakota teachers, not taking advantage of the economy of scale of joining with other states. We're looking at anywhere from $37 to $45 per student.
Senator Pullman.
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent Basler, I missed the last meeting of the task force, and so my question is in relation to the hybrid requirement. I'm a big fan of the ACT suite, the off-the-shelf test. Now, when we write the RFP, will they not be able to submit their off-the-shelf test as an option because that's significantly cheaper at addressing Chairman Nathy's or Vice Chairman Nathy's, concern. And so my question is that eliminated now when you put the word hybrid into the RFP that they can't give us that off-the-shelf option?
Chairman Shively, Senator Pullman, members of the committee, I fully expect that ACT will submit an RFP. And so when you submit an RFP, there are certain areas that deliver certain points, much like a rubric of and weighted factors. So depending on how well they do on other areas, they may, when asked the question, will you have a mechanism to allow North Dakota teachers to contribute to the items, they won't score very well in that area. With the ACT suite, there is concern, justifiable concern among some of our elementary and middle school teachers saying ACT and even the ACT Aspire has a broad array of questions in it. And they may have questions that are part of our fifth grade standards that appear on our fourth grade or even third grade ACT Aspire question. And so should teachers be held accountable or have their students judged on an assessment for accountability purposes that are part of standards 2 years later. They like the ACT Aspire for the formative purpose and for being and really narrowing in on those high, but for the purposes of accountability, it changes the conversation.
So. Senator Olban.
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent Basler, how many states require in law that their students, all students, take the ACT?
Chairman Shively, Senator Oban, the number is growing, and right now I'm going to say it's somewhere, it's over half at this point. I'm going to say it's in the upper 20s. I will make sure I get that answer to you specifically. I will email it to Dustin.
And if ESSA now gives states and schools the flexibility to determine what assessment, whether it's a state assessment or the ACT, count as sort of the, you know, big assessment, then should North Dakota consider making that a requirement anymore? I mean, I understand that it's our university system requires it to get in, but not all kids go to college. So, I mean, my question is, should we be considering or talking about not making that a requirement, or is there benefit in requiring both?
Senator Shively, or Chairman Shively, Senator Oban, I think it would be a good idea for the legislature to consider all options. We are certainly moving into a new era of education and education accountability, and I will talk about that a little bit more with ESSA. But as we move to competency and proficiency-based education, as we move to even school or colleges admission processes, now considering portfolio presentations as one of the determinations of competency. I think of ACT and the score is valued and it will be valuable for at least the immediate future, and we should continue to go the path because it does provide value and it is something that even our university system still does use. But I think as legislators begin to see how public education K-12 and the university system is transforming over the next 5 to 10 years, that sometimes you let go of the old to move to the new.
Okay. Senator Pullman.
Chairman Shively and Superintendent Basler, from a financial standpoint, if the state were to say, in relation to Senator Olan's question, okay, high schools, you can choose between the ACT or the state assessment. It's your choice. The state will pay for one. Does that make the state assessment more expensive if you have fewer tests being administered?
Chairman Shively, Senator Pullman, yes.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent, what is the current cost for the ACT?
Chairman Shively, Representative Meyer, I don't know that. I'm going to say low 20s, but I will certainly email that item to Dustin as well. Thank you.
I guess the only other question I'd have is this committee's task was to study the content and standards, and a couple things took all the fun out of that. But one of the questions I'd have is this is your assessment. Is the standards going to roll out in the same kind of time frame, and maybe go over that a little bit of how you're going to roll out the new standards?
Certainly. Chairman Shively, just to recap, I did provide the testimony, but some of you weren't here at the last interim education meeting. So for a recap and for those that weren't able to attend in the last meeting, the standards review committee met diligently throughout the summer. We had over 70 teachers, math and English teachers, meeting. They have their review out. I believe you all received an email announcing the opportunity to comment on the standards. So the first draft of this group's work is out for public comment right now. They'll be out for a few more weeks. The committee will meet again later in October to consider those comments, integrate those comments into the second draft. That second draft will be put out for public comment again. The same process will occur. They will integrate those comments into the third and possibly final draft. And we expect the adoption of our revised and newly updated math and English language arts standards to be completed March of 2017. And the teachers will begin implementing those standards in their classrooms the fall of 2017 for the 17-18 school year. So teachers will teach with those standards for a year, and then in spring of 2018, they'll have the first assessment based on those revised standards. I should talk to you about the length. So because we were able to, anytime that you change an assessment, you have to have a first year of testing the test items, and then you need to use those results to throw out invalid if there's too much of a skew of answers, if it seems to be favorability or discriminatory. You throw out those test questions, but you use that year to determine what your cut scores are for part novice, partially proficient, proficient, and advanced, based on a whole formula created by psychometricians. So the results, anytime that you have a new test the first year, the results, you have a lot of work to do that first year. So the results aren't turned around as timely as you would like. We had gotten to the point in the second year of the administration of this year where schools, as I said, were able to get their results. Teachers were able to get the results of their students within 30 days. The first year that we do the new assessment, it will have to go through that process again, and there will be a longer lag the first year. That's why it's not a good idea to be switching exams frequently.
Representative Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Basler, the new model is full of promise from the standpoint of being usable by staff members once they get the results and so on. But one of the realities when you talk about the comparability is going to be that somebody is still going to say, so how are we doing in comparison when we take whatever the national or the international comparisons are, the NAEP, whatever it is. So this may actually frustrate the press a little bit because we don't, it, depending upon what version we end up with. But could you talk a little bit about that in your committee's work? Did they consider those kind of things?
Chairman Shively, Representative Sanford, yes, it suddenly becomes a much more complex story to tell. And you have to, it's not as clear of a comparison when South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, California, when we were all taking the same test, it was an easy across-the-board comparison. When you don't have that anymore as part of a consortium, the story is complex, and you have to work with your parents, with your public, and with your press a lot longer in order to identify and explain the differences of standards and the differences of tests. And that was part of the desire to move towards that uniform reporting and uniform assessing because of what I've called the honesty gap. The honesty gap has occurred, and it does occur. Some states set their cut scores very low, and we're able to say 85% of our students are performing well and reaching proficiency, and North Dakota chose to challenge their students, provide, you know, high expectations on a rigorous test, and it was reporting that our students were at 70% or 60%. When we all moved to the same assessment, we found out that even we were more generous than we probably should have, and there was an honesty gap as we spoke to our parents and our students as well, that we were over-reporting actually how many of our students were proficient to be successful at the next level in each subject area. And so, you know, I'm a big proponent of where are we at and then working towards improvement. So we are going to strive, and the committee was firm in that desire. We as North Dakotans will strive to have an exam, a test, an assessment that is an honest reporting of actually where their students are at each grade level. So we will probably have more explaining to do if another state chooses to be a little bit less rigorous in their assessment. I think it's important for a third grade parent to understand and hear exactly at third grade what they need to do to work on over the summer to prepare their child for fourth grade, or what that child needs to do, rather than going through your whole career of K-12 saying, you're proficient, then suddenly at the end of 12th grade we have, you know, a 27% remediation need in our state. So the task force was committed to making sure we had an assessment and cut scores that was closing that honesty gap for our public. I hope that answered your question.
Senator Flackel.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Baszler, I think I have a shared concern about, you know, the ability to compare the data to even over years. Do you think when we move to a new system, the psychometricians will be able to say, here's where we are today, but here's where converting the data, we would have been 5 years ago, and here's where we would have been 10 years ago, based upon their work to extrapolate that, in essence, back? Because one of our challenges is, are we better today than we were 5 years ago? Are we better today than we were 10 years ago?
Senator Shively, Senator Flackel, members of the committee, yes, there are formulas out there. There are procedures that can make that happen. We can go back as far as we desire to go back as a state to do that, just depending on how much, obviously it's a contracted service that we would need to have them do a crosswalk, a comparability.
Representative Kelch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Baszler, I think the last time that you testified on the new standards, you said that they were very much like the old standards. Is that still fairly accurate description?
Representative, or Chairman Shively, Representative Kelsch. What I said was I have no way to even predict how similar or different those standards were or are, the new version. The group that has been meeting and will continue to meet were set forth with the task of writing the standards the way that they felt was best for North Dakota. There was no mandate of changing them 50% or more. There was no expectation of keeping them 15% or less. And in fact, that's not even a conversation that occurs among their small work groups or their large work groups. It simply is their professional expertise. They are in the driver's seat. And if they are seeing that they brought in their binders of the standards that they've used, and they've taken notes over these last 6 years about this needs to be tighter, or this should be cleaner, or this is beyond. And so they're using those notes and the soliciting from their colleagues across the state, those same sort of comments. And so as they're moving through each standard by standard, each grade level, they're integrating those notes of those experiences with not much regard to how much different or how similar they're staying.
Continue.
Thank you. And I think, you know, they're probably going to be fairly similar. And I think that would be, and the smarter balance is a test that was based on the old standards. Mm-hmm. If they are fairly similar, and, you know, the accuracy of new tests for at least a year aren't that great, wouldn't it be smart to use smarter balance testing instead of trying to develop something totally new that you have to correct maybe for a couple of years down the road and lose that accuracy of testing?
Chairman Shively, Representative Kelsch, I hope and I expect just like I fully expect ACT to put in a bid, I would expect that possibly Park or Smarter Balance would submit to possibly being in the running. But it will be up to each of those individual bidders to determine how closely aligned their test item questions would be to what our standards are. That's not up for us to decide. Again, it's the responsibility of us to choose a test that's aligned to our standards and not to keep our standards aligned to a test. So the people at Smarter Balanced or UCLA or Measured Progress or whoever might submit a bid, it would be up to them, and they call it a blueprint. It would be up to them to determine how close their blueprint of assessment items is to what our standards are. And so based on that, we have to remain agnostic through this whole process of an RFP, and we have to determine and evaluate the submissions of the RFP in order to choose an assessment that is appropriate for our standards.
Senator Davison?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Superintendent Baszler, on the standards alignment, just a quick question on that. So do I understand it? So currently our Smarter Balance test, and there's a name for it, and you'll help me with it, I'm sure. It allows, if a student takes a test and they've answered all the third grade questions right, it goes up to the fourth grade a little bit. It does not. It just stays right at the third grade questions. It doesn't try to keep going to a higher level. Okay.
Senator Shively and Senator Davison, members of the committee, the Smarter Balance test is adaptive, but within grade level. So if you get you start out with a medium question, every student starts out with a medium hard question. If they get it right, it gets harder. If they get it wrong, it gets a little bit easier. If they get it right, they may get a same similar level of hard question just to affirm that student really does know, but it never goes outside of grade level.
So are we talking about some people want it to go outside of grade level and some people don't? Is that right? That's what I'm understanding.
Chairman Shively, Senator Davison, yes. Some of our task members felt that it was good to go outside of grade level. Some of them felt that, no, they did not want to be evaluated.
Any of the argument for that, though, if the teacher is differentiating their instruction and they have a smart student in there, you should be able to see if that student grew outside of that. Is that the argument that they're...
Chairman Shively, Senator Davison, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the counter argument to that was that there were other assessments that could show that, like our NWEA map or STARS.
Representative Nathie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kirsten, with the difficult revenue picture we're going to find ourselves in next session, how much of impact will that have to be when it comes to the testing? You talked about it may be more expensive if you go down a different route. How much of that will dictate what happens when it comes to which test and where we go?
Chairman Shively, Representative Nathy, since it's a federal requirement, it is federally funded, and so these are federal dollars. But the challenge is that those federal, if we could stay less expensive, or not the challenge, but the unfortunate thing is those federal dollars were allowable for standards and assessment. And so the more we use on the delivery of the administration of the assessment, the less that we're able to use to help our teachers with professional development and on standards.
So you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul sort of thing. All right. Thanks.
Representative Hunsker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Baszler, we're moving in a new direction, and anytime you do that, school districts start to implement this new direction, and students take tests and get assessed. And if they don't do well, immediately they blame the system rather than maybe the child is not applying itself. So it seems like you've got a huge job in educating parents and the public what this is about. So what are your plans there? Go out to each school and talk to them about it or what? Because that's a huge issue.
Chairman Shively, Representative Hunsker, members of the committee, it is. And communication and transparency is critically important in this day and age about our children's education. So yes, it is new. My testimony on the Every Student Succeeds Act, we'll talk a little bit about how we got to a point in this nation of a hyper-focus on assessments, and that's all we were talking about is standardized assessments in measuring the quality of our schools. ESSA is allowing us to move away from that a bit, and so some of that conversation will be more well-rounded as we move into the next 3 to 5 years. But to your point, we don't have a communication department, if you will, and so we really are relying on you as individuals, those that are knowledgeable about this. We're relying on our stakeholders, our educational partners, Council of Educational Leaders, our North Dakota United, the North Dakota School Boards Association, the Special Education Directors, the REAs, and the list goes on and on and on, to be those spokespeople and explain. Parents generally are very appreciative when they sit down with their teachers and the teachers can explain to them what's going on. And so we're asking that our local school districts really help educate and inform their teachers, because the teachers are the frontline people that are answering the questions to the majority of the public. And what we found in North Dakota or what we found in a nationwide survey, and I believe it would be very similar in North Dakota, teachers are the most trusted of all individuals in their entire education system. And the further that you move away from the classroom, the less trust there is on any communication that is coming to them. So you take that philosophy and you have me as the state superintendent. I'm probably the least trusted person in education in the North Dakota. And so any communication that actually comes from me would be suspect, I believe. And so it's important. So what we are doing as a department is creating materials and creating providing information to our educational stakeholders and to our local school districts to help them help communicate in their communities. That's your question.
Thank you. Yeah, it does. But anytime you lay out the plan that you have, you may have some schools where they just fall through the cracks. It doesn't get done. It seems like there has to be some means that to assure that this is implemented in every school. The teachers do take care of it rather than, you know, we talk about it, it sounds good, it is right, but somehow there has to be some follow-up, some checking, and that's probably part of your plan.
Senator Shively, Representative Hunsker, members of the committee, yes, absolutely. And that's part of the role as the Department of Public Instruction. We do need to do that monitoring. We do need to make sure that our schools are following through on what we've asked them to do. As we start to measure more of a broad yardstick of indicators within a classroom or within a school district, part of that, as we just, our ESSA committee, and I was just came from a meeting, part of that will be a higher expectation of transparency from our local school districts. And that will be something that we will be measuring.
Representative Nathy? Do you have a question? Senator Robin?
Chairman Shively and Superintendent Basler, Representative Hunsker's question was sort of a good lead-in to what I wanted to ask in shifting a little bit away from the assessment into the updating of the standards. Without a communications department in your office, how are we making sure that the public knows that now is the time for public comment and that then there will be another time for public comment so that they are engaged in the process so that if there are any concerns about the standards, they can be engaged in the process and it not be something that, you know, comes back a year or two from now and people are upset that they feel they were not a part of the process. I mean, is it clearly on your website? What can we do to make sure that we're getting that in the hands of our constituents? Just so everybody knows that this process is happening. After you were here at last meeting, I went down and sat in the room with the math teachers, and as a former math teacher was seriously happy I'm not a part of that process.
It's grueling.
In revising the standards. But I mean, I think we have a responsibility to make sure all of us are a part of letting people know. So what is your office doing? How can we be of help in making sure that people know this is the time to be engaged in that?
Chairman Shively, Senator Obam, members of the committee, thank you. I appreciate that offer to help us. So what we have done is we have set out a press release to the entire media of the state of North Dakota, giving them the link. It is on our website. It's prominently displayed on our website. We have it on our Facebook. We have tweeted it out. If you could share that link, if you could retweet that, if you could share the email, all of you have received an email, that same exact press release that we sent to the media with the link in that. If you could share that with your constituents, I know some of you have been contacted frequently over the last 4 years with questions about these standards, to share those with the people that were contacting you, write about it within your local newspapers when you do your update. We have, in addition to that, we have sent it out to all of the administrators, curriculum directors, business managers, school board presidents, elementary principals, middle school principals, high school principals of our public and our non-public, to our REAs, to our special education unit directors, and asked them to share that with each of their staff members. So hopefully they will share it with every teacher, who will then share it with their family members and their community. And so those are the steps that we have taken. We're hoping that people are resharing, retweeting, and forwarding those emails. I will also be doing an op-ed and sending it to our daily newspapers to try and, you know, get the word out in that way as well.
Seeing no other questions, I guess you may continue.
Thank you. This one's actually very exciting. So. Chairman Shively and members of the Legislative Interim Education Committee, my name again is Kirsten Basler, North Dakota's Superintendent of Public Instruction. I will continue my testimony to provide an update on the work of North Dakota's Every Student Succeeds Act Accountability Planning Committee. This committee is a team of educators, parents, and leaders who are writing the new accountability plan to meet the requirements of the new federal education law called Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA. For the last 14 years, we've been operating under the federal law we knew as No Child Left Behind. NCLB measured the quality of our schools on two simple factors, test scores in three subject areas, math, English, and science, and high school graduation rates. While these are very important aspects to measure, NCLB overemphasized the goal of having every student be proficient on a single standardized assessment. December 2015 marked the beginning of a new era in the American system of education as the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 was renewed, finally, as the Every Student Succeeds Act. This legislation replaced the ESEA renewal of 2002, which was NCLB. ESSA offers an overhaul of policy and systems of oversight that recognizes serious issues caused by NCLB, ultimately resulting in a return to an increased role in the authority of states for their own education systems. The law will take effect on July 1st, 2017. In the interim, the schools are still operating under NCLB during this 2016-17 school year. The North Dakota Department of Public Instruction has been monitoring ESSA since it was first introduced on the Senate floor in April of 2015. And we immediately took steps to prepare to implement the law after it was signed in December. One of the most critical and influential changes of ESSA pertains to the accountability plans of states. While accountability plans under NCLB were inflexible and marked by rigid adherence to unrealistic improvement in standardized test scores, states now have an unprecedented amount of flexibility in drafting their accountability plans and to determine their own criteria for identifying quality factors to measure. ESSA is a complete overhaul of education policy. The success of this new law in North Dakota will ultimately rely on the coordination of all stakeholders in education to offer our students the greatest chance to succeed with the new flexibility the law offers. Accordingly, NDDPI has assembled a planning team for ESSA that involves all these stakeholders. The ESSA Planning Committee contains 43 members with representatives from all the following stakeholder groups: career and technical education, higher education, NDCEL, NDSBA, ND United, Teachers of the Year, Governor's Office of Indian Affairs, English Language Learners, parents, special education teachers, teachers of education preparation programs, public schools, non-public schools, legislators, and business representatives. A list of all the individuals on the committee is attached to this document. The committee has been meeting monthly since May and has made considerable headway in the guiding of the drafting of our accountability plan. The planning committee will continue to meet monthly, and we intend to submit our accountability plan to the U.S. Department of Education in March 2017 to ensure its approval by July's implementation. The primary document resulting from this process will be North Dakota's new accountability plan. This document will retain some provisions from the accountability plan under NCLB, but an overhaul of the primary reporting requirements, namely NCLB's strict adherence to standardized test scores, will result in a completely new outlook for the future of education in North Dakota. ESSA provides us a golden opportunity to find the right mix of measures to show the true quality of our schools. For example, the ESSA committee may take into account whether a school has adequate science, technology, or fine arts choices, or ample opportunities to take CTE classes or advanced coursework. They might consider measuring whether students have access to robust library resources, career counselors, or leadership opportunities. They might consider measuring student and teacher attendance or engagement. ESSA eliminated some provisions and it added others. There is no longer a provision for highly qualified teachers, and all programs related to the 100 proficiency rate have been tossed out. The federal government has significantly less power to intrude in states' affairs, and accordingly, money in the form of grants designed solely to advance a state toward the 100 proficiency goal have been eliminated. The law did, however, add a number of grants and provisions to increase local control of education, including new early learning and literacy programs. Despite NCLB's flaws, there were some provisions that were beneficial to our education system. And many of these provisions remain the same, or remain with some modifications. Among the provisions remaining the same are the creation of school and district report cards, a 95% participation rate of students in state assessments, teacher and principal evaluations remaining optional, and the parents' right to know clause. There are also many provisions that have undergone considerable modifications. States have greater flexibility in determining what can qualify as their state assessment. They can also use state assessments to measure student growth. And states may limit the amount of time students spend taking assessments. Content area standards are still required, but are not subject to federal approval as they were under NCLB. And homeless student requirements have been strengthened, requiring funds be set aside for that subgroup. The most influential provision is that states have received unprecedented control. The U.S. Secretary of Education and the U.S. Department of Education have been explicitly restricted from interfering in how a state institutes indicators or measures and may not add or modify any requirements to state plans. The plans are created solely by the states to be used by the states. Punitive actions by the federal government have been stripped, as the U.S. Department of Education cannot impose sanctions such as withholding grant monies or closing schools. All corrective action lies solely in the power of the states. North Dakota and its planning committee is serious about achieving lasting success for every learner. The lessons of NCLB have taught us that our accountability plan must not be so narrow-minded as to sacrifice school quality, teacher effectiveness, and student learning. Rather, the plan should guide, support, and ensure continuous improvements through measures that identify the needs in both academic skills and the human needs of our students and their communities. One of the keys to this vision is eliminating the idea that a single measure for growth is adequate for a whole state. Our accountability plan will point to multiple measure points of data that will not be confined to just test scores. We will include test scores. They will be part of our measurement, but it will not be confined to just that as it was under NCLB. This is a huge job. We are focusing on ensuring our students are choice ready. Our mission statement reads, all students will graduate choice ready with the knowledge, skills, and disposition to be successful in whatever they choose to do, whether they pursue a post-secondary degree, enroll in a technical college, enter the workforce, or join the military. The committee has divided into three work groups that will meet in between each regularly scheduled monthly meeting of the whole committee. The first work group is focusing on the teacher and leader effectiveness area of our state plan. The second work group will focus on the details of our assessment requirements, accountability, and standards. The third work group will focus on the continuous improvement area of our plan. This area of continuous improvement is new and unique and really speaks to the yardstick of measurements that we will be developing, because we want to make sure that everyone is improving as much as they can all the time. Even our smartest and most accomplished students deserve to be challenged in our schools, and even our most successful and highest performing schools can be challenged and should be challenged to move from good to great. We intend to have a first draft of our accountability plan available in December, and we'll provide a public comment period in January of 2017. The ESSA committee will take that public comment and use it to improve the plan. In conclusion, as I said, ESSA represents a clean slate for education in North Dakota. We have seen the problems with an over-reliance on data sets that are too limited and inflexible. And Congress has given us an opportunity to prove that school districts and states know what is best for their students. The need for success cannot be overstated. If we do not develop a plan that allows our students to better flourish than they would have been able to under NCLB, then there is nothing stopping Congress from bringing this control back to the federal government. The key to success in North Dakota involves the meeting of all stakeholders from across the education spectrum and bringing them together to give our students the greatest chance of success. This unprecedented freedom given to states by ESSA will allow us to directly respond to the needs of our schools and our communities, and will allow schools to meet their students at critical junctures in their lives where they need the most support and growth for growth and academic development. As stated, the road forward involves a considerable amount of work. NDDPI is taking the steps to ensure that the work our state is putting into ESSA will be a success. With diligence and fidelity to our accountability plan, North Dakota has an opportunity to lead the way in education across this nation. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony, and I would be pleased to answer any questions.
Representative Kelch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Superintendent Baser. You show a lot of enthusiasm for making sure the students in North Dakota have a good education and learning, or have the ability to figure out what they need to throughout life. But one of the question I have is every state school officer in your position doing the same thing? And if not, do we lose a way of comparing how well we're doing with across the nation?
Chairman Shively, Representative Kelch, North Dakota is ahead of the pack on this one. From what we've heard from other people around the state, we have gathered our stakeholders much earlier. We began gathering them immediately and putting that together. We are not going to create an NCLB-lite accountability plan. Many of my colleagues, from the feedback that I'm getting from others that are working with several of the states, some of our facilitators and those that are helping us to facilitate the group, have been commenting to us that we are broadening and looking outside and being more innovative to ensure that all of our students are succeeding, our high achievers, as well as our students that are still need extra supports. Does that potentially lead to inequity across the nation? That's possible. I believe it's imperative that we as our state really continue to forge forward with this plan, with this work, because we have 12,000 students now that are depending on that. It does get a little dicier, if you will, when we have a state like North Dakota where we're having so many students come in from many other states across the country. We are involved, North Dakota has chosen to be part of a cross-state learning group, a cohort, and the two assistant superintendents and I will be traveling to Minneapolis in late October to compare our plan with other plans and have peer reviews. So other states can comment on our plan and we can show our plan, we can see other people's plans. So hopefully all boats will rise on this, but a major theme of the meetings of chief state school officers is part of the comments that I made to you today. If we don't do this as states, then we're going to swing back to having less control again.
Any other questions? Representative Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Baszler, there's the saying, the devil made me do it. And before the devil has been the feds, and now it's North Dakota. Mm-hmm. And so my question relates to there's certainly enough information historically that we know school districts and we know student populations that struggle. And so my question is, what level of authority is the state going to be able to utilize now in order to take whatever kind of actions necessary to get modification for those students?
Chairman Shively, Representative Sanford, that's a good question. To address your first part of your comment about, first it was the feds and then it was the states, we've had such great meetings of this ESSA committee, and as I said, you can see the list of those members. We feel, as a state, we've been chasing this car for a long time, or chasing this idea of return the control back to the states. There was a comment that we suddenly feel like the dog that finally caught the car. It's like, oh my gosh, here it is. And so there was a sense of overwhelmingness at the beginning at our June meeting. July and August meetings, I think there was an understanding and a realization that this isn't going to be a plan that's written by the education agency either. This is going to be a plan that is written by these stakeholders and approved by the Department of Public Instruction. And so there's a deep sense of ownership. One of our committee members said, holy cats, I don't want my phone ringing off the hook with all of my 160 colleagues across the state if I do this wrong. And so there's a certain sense of responsibility that they are taking because it is going to be a plan written by the stakeholders. To answer your question about what authority do we have as a state to really ensure that the accountability plan is implemented for all of our students, at our last meeting, and I'm not sure if you were here, I did share with Dustin the scan that was done of the 50 states of legislative state law of six different levers that states are utilizing in order to hold their schools accountable. And of those six levers, North Dakota has only employed one. And so I shared that scan with you. There are certain legislative opportunities to regain or to secure some greater authority that other states are using for accountability purposes for making sure that that school that is chronically or habitually underperforming, that there are some levers that a legislature can consider for their state. North Dakota's only lever is funding. And I mentioned that there were, the funding mechanism is that we offer additional funding for someone, for a school district that is underperforming, to provide them with this, additional assistance. But even then, that funding is upon approval by a local school board. And so even if they're underperforming and we offer them additional dollars for assistance and support and additional technical support from the Department of Public Instruction, a school district within our state does not have to accept those grant dollars. And with those grant dollars, of course, come more strings. If the state is going to give them dollars, then there's going to be certain, and we have had a school district that has initially accepted the funding and then got into the funding for the year and realized all the extra expectations that were going to reporting, and then they refused it. So we don't have a lot of authority. The Department of Public Instruction, the state as a legislature, does not have a lot of authority to really be punitive or to, help. And punitive isn't the word, to really demand or require or expect that a school continue to improve, but there are other options out there that other states are using. And I think it, the report does a very good job of how effective each of those are.
Representative Hunsker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Baszler, up to this point, the true measure of the quality of education in our schools has been determined by testing, and we've gotten into some trouble because of that. Now you're indicating, let's say, Bismarck science department technology, CTE classes, much better than, say, Newburgh or Westhope, because we don't have the facilities there. And in determining which school is doing a good job, you have to take those things into consideration. That seems to be a huge task. How do you get to that, to say a smaller school, well, because you haven't got a library that's up to specs or whatever, so then we'll give you a little break in determining whether you're, that sounds like you have to have some guidelines for the folks who do this.
Chairman Shively, Representative Hunsker, and that's why this is a huge job. And so so there will be certain non-negotiables that the committee will determine are all schools are going to be measured on and reported on. But then there will be a dashboard or a yardstick of other factors. And each school, our intent is to meet schools where they're at for continuous improvement. So if a school district just sees that within this dashboard of reporting that they are not scoring as well or not offering as much as maybe the school district down the road, or they're seeing that their students are going to the North Dakota State College of Science, but they're not offering a lot of those prep classes to get them ready for that. That is something that the dashboard of reporting a school board can use to create its strategic plan and to create its budget to continuously improve from there. But we're not going to measure schools against each other on those yardsticks. But each local school district will determine where they're weakest And just like we do with strategic plans, what's your area of improvement? You identify what you want to improve as a school district, and then that was, we're trying to recognize our schools for going beyond just getting test scores. There's been much conversation with the PICUS report about our career advisors or career counselors, and there was frustration among our legislators that there wasn't as much career counseling or career advising that was going on in some of our schools. Some of our schools chose to invest in career advisors, and so this ESSA will provide an opportunity for us to recognize and be transparent about how school districts are really spending their resources and investing as their priorities.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
I guess we have a period of public comment on this topic. Is there any public comment on this? Okay, committee, is there any directions that we have to take with this? I don't see any. The only thing we'll have to do is make our final report on this. So unless there's anything else, I guess that would be all we do with this. Okay, let's take 10 minutes and then we'll come back. Committee, we'll call back to order. Okay, we'll move on to our next item, which is our two bill drafts, and we'll have Dustin go over both of them. So, Dustin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. Got a couple of bill drafts. The one that I would like to start with is the 17.0143. That is the 3000 version of this bill draft, and this is the third time that this bill has been before the committee. I'm not going to go line by line. I'm not going to go over it line by line with you because, by and large, it is similar to the previous draft. This bill still has no requirement that school districts have to adopt a policy on restraint and seclusion, but it continues along with what we previously said, where if they adopt a policy on restraint and seclusion, they have to report that to DPI and so on and so forth. Just a couple of items to point out different in this draft from the previous draft is, at the last meeting I was directed to add a definition of chemical restraint to our definition section, which were added at the last meeting. All the other definitions in the first subsection there were added at the last meeting, and I had used the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights to develop those. I checked, and to the best of my knowledge, the Office of Civil Rights did not have a definition of chemical restraint. So I consulted with DPI to ask and see if they had a recommendation as to where to find a good, useful definition of chemical restraint. And they suggested that I look at the model policy through the School Board Association, which I did. And so the definition of chemical restraint that was added for this meeting as subsection 1A is, by and large, fairly close to what's in the model policy for the School Board Association. But other than that single definition of chemical restraint being added into this bill draft, nothing else for the most part has changed.
Questions on that? And I guess what we're going to do is we're going to go through both these bill drafts, then we're going to open it up to the public for other comments or suggestions before we go on to anything else. So if not, we'll move on to the second bill draft.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next bill draft is 0269, and this is a new bill draft that was requested by a committee member at the last committee meeting after discussion. This also addresses restraint and seclusion, but there are some slightly different variations and different takes on approaching restraint and seclusion as opposed to the other bill draft. Unlike the previous bill draft, this bill draft does require school districts to adopt a policy by July 1st of 2018. And the other major change to point out in this bill draft as opposed to the previous one that we have looked at is in the previous bill draft, incidents of restraint or seclusion had to be reported to DPI. And in this bill draft, if restraint or seclusion occurs within a school, the school must notify the parents of the child that restraint or seclusion was utilized with, and also under this bill draft, the school must also periodically report to the school district itself. There's nothing going to DPI under this bill draft for reporting purposes.
Questions on this bill draft? Seeing none, we'll open it up to public comment on this topic. Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman, may I give a report from the Seclusion and Restraint Task Force?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Ms. Rose-Stoller is going to hand out a document. This document was prepared after several meetings that we held, and I'll wait till you all get it. Everybody have one?
Yep.
The Seclusion and Restraint Task Force was assembled in March, and we worked to develop and provide specific recommendations to this committee. And what kind of policies and procedures relating to seclusion and restraint in North Dakota schools that the stakeholders involved in this committee would like to see. We operated under the consensus-based decision-making process, and in that process, no votes were taken either yes, I support this, or no, I don't. We got to the point where you'll see 8 recommendations down below, and all of the members of the committee that were present at the last meeting approved of these. They said they could support them if they came before committee, before the legislature. And I'll talk a little bit further about some caveats in that later on. So we had some shared values. It was a collaborative and integrated stakeholder participation. Our focus was on keeping everyone safe in our schools. It was student focused. We talked a lot and listened a lot about best practices. We had uniform implementation and monitoring, and we had a variety of resources that we looked at. It was initiated by the North Dakota Protection and Advocacy Process, and the following organizations were co-conveners. In other words, they were interested in supporting this. The DPI, North Dakota Protection and Advocacy, Council of Education Leaders, North Dakota United, and the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Minot State University. So the task force had day-long meetings. We started in April. We did not meet in June. We met in May, July, and August. We had an opportunity to learn a lot about seclusion and restraint policies in North Dakota schools. We heard from national experts, from other providers for services with youth. We had an opportunity at each monthly meeting to discuss options and recommendations for policies, procedures, and definitions related to seclusion and restraint. And at the August 25th meeting, we came with the following 8 agreements that we all could support to bring forward to the Education Committee here. The first one is we support the use of the U.S. Department of Education civil rights data collection definitions of physical restraint, mechanical restraint, and seclusion. Now, we haven't included them here, but those are 3 definitions that you can actually find on the Department of Education website. We came up with probably a list of 30 or 40 other definitions that people would like to have seen, but we focused on these 3 so that if there's a policy developed, we feel that these are the most important, 3 most important definitions that all schools would need to have a similar definition, so you're all reporting the same thing, you're all looking at the same thing, your policy addresses the same thing. Number 2, we support all North Dakota schools being required to have a written local policy regarding seclusion and restraint. Number 3, we support seclusion and restraint policies being developed at the local level, not at the state level, not through the legislature. Number 4, we support restraints not being used in a manner that restricts a student's breathing. Number five, we support the school district's use of their student staff safety policies and other policies pertaining to extreme instances such as an active shooter or an intruder. And this came to light with the fact that if there is an intruder in school and someone, whether it's a staff person, the superintendent, or whoever, puts that individual in a choke hold or some other hold, would that be against their school policy? And we said, no, that is not. That person is probably not a student in the school. So we want the schools to use their policies, and we think that a lot of the schools have those policies right now. Number six, we support biannual reporting to legislative management, and that report would then come to the Interim Education Committee. And that information is already being reported to the Office of Civil Rights. It comes out every 2 years, and it can be recorded. It's already recorded, I think, on the North Dakota SLEDS program, and so there would be no additional reporting requirement. We don't want to put another burden on the schools to report. But the information is interesting, and it's we can see that there has been an increase over the last reporting period to the most recent one. And I think it's about 200 incidences more reported. Now, that may be for a number of conditions. Our concern is are all incidents of seclusion and restraint being reported? Number seven, we support training for school district personnel in the area of seclusion and restraint. And number eight goes along with that. We do not support unfunded mandates. Thus, we recommend that necessary fiscal reports for seclusion and restraint training be included for school personnel. And a little bit on that, we heard about a number of different kinds of programs being used, whether it's in our youth correction system, whether it's through special education, whether it's through schools right now. And we heard from CEL that there are a number of schools already training in CPI, which we heard a little bit about CPI here at one of our meetings, crisis prevention intervention. So the number of schools right now, I'm not sure, I think we have Russ here can tell me exactly the number of schools, but of those that sent the survey back in, 27% of them that sent the survey back said they train all of their school personnel in CPI. 27% said they train none of their school personnel in CPI. 14% said they train some of them. And 30% they train other kinds of people that come into their school district, such as special ed personnel and counselors and additional personnel. So we know that CPI is being used across the state and in a lot of places, but number eight's important. The task force does not want to put out an unfunded mandate to our schools. We're going to convene again September 22nd next week. We feel there's some other work that we need to do and fine-tuning some of our thoughts and ideas as we go through these eight agreements that we've had. We've had wonderful, engaging discussions. We've had a variety of stakeholders. Ms. Rose Stoller is going to explain a little bit more. She has been the glue that has kept us together in this process, and it's been very, very interesting and very, very educational to see what is going on in our schools and what can go on in our schools if we adopt a policy on seclusion and restraint. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, on the other side, there is what kinds of data you could get from the Office of Civil Rights data collection. Now, this would have to be gleaned out by some agency because right now it comes in a mass document that is many hundreds of pages long. But we feel that there is an opportunity to glean that information out and be provided to the Interim Education Committee. And so I would like Rose to come forward, if Mr. Chairman, with your permission, to explain a little bit more.
Sure.
And then we would answer questions.
Okay. Before, Rose is welcome to come up. I guess that's fine. I guess the only question I'd have for you is you did mention that this goes through our SLEDS department. And are those data points that they can, I would imagine if it goes through SLEDS, those are just data points that can be pulled out real quickly in a report, just have to request it.
Well, we are not sure exactly how that
I'll find out.
So we have some more work to do on that, whether it's pullable, but it's already reported to the Office of Civil Rights right now.
Okay. Rose, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry for the members of the committee. My name is Rose Fuller. I'm from the Consensus.
Is your mic on, Rose? You have to repeat your name then again for us. So.
My name is Rose Stoller from the Consensus Council.
Okay, thank you.
You all seem terribly close to me. I don't know. Better?
Is the light on? Is
the
light blue?
The light is blue. Okay. Since earlier this year, as was mentioned by Senator Heckerman, I've been, the Consensus Council and I have been facilitating the Seclusion and Restraint Task Force, keeping everyone safe in our schools. This is a group of over 40 people from a variety of disciplines and views, a very broad range of folks that have come together once monthly to reach agreements on what has become a really difficult issue of public policy. I don't want to repeat what Senator Heckerman has already said to you, but I do want to mention specifically that over the course of our work, the task force has had presentations on some of the best practices around the state and around the country from CPI, the Crisis Prevention Institute, also from the North Dakota Youth Correctional Center, the YCC, the North Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch, Bismarck Public Schools, and then the state developmental disabilities sector, who were really early pioneers in articulating policies about seclusion and restraint as it relates to people with disabilities. The common definitions that we have agreed on as of the last meeting are important and are taken from the OCR information. We did discuss Senator Flackel's recommendation about a definition for chemical restraint. The task force opted not to include that particular definition, but we want to take some time at our meeting next week to develop some ancillary or adjunct documents as resources that folks could use that would include definitions of that term and others that didn't rise to sort of the top of the agreement list. Some agreements were easier to reach than others, as is usually the case, but I believe the task force worked hard to develop thoughtful and realistic recommendations that protect students and staff, while also assuring that school district policies are developed at the local level. That's very important to the task force. As was mentioned, we also received an overview of this huge body of data that comes from North Dakota from OCR. The information that Senator Heckerman shared with you gives you a snapshot of what that data can do and what it can't do, what it can tell you and what maybe it can't tell you. But we hope that it's helpful to you in as you consider developing a standard for reporting information about seclusion and restraint. As has been mentioned, the task force will meet again in September, maybe October, definitely September, to consider the development of information that could inform local school district policy development. Such information might include best practices for seclusion and restraint policy and implementation, as well as other information to be of help to anyone seeking information about the use of seclusion and restraint, prohibitions, and general terminology. Thanks for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can. There are other members of the task force here as well that might be helpful.
Rose, currently right now we have no definition for restraint seclusion that's listed anywhere that we use. I mean, that's pretty much correct. I mean, we don't have a state law. It's not listed anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm guessing there are others here that do.
But okay, with
we
that
don't.
Okay, with that in mind, then I guess what has to be reported to the national level then? What's determined then? I mean, how is that determined that has to be reported? How do we determine what's being reported now?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it's my understanding that it is a mandatory requirement that school districts report to OCR via a standardized tool so that everyone is reporting the same data. So in terms of what precisely is being reported, it's voluminous. It's, yeah.
So if a school determines it's not restraint or seclusion, they just don't report then, is that?
Correct. I assume that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hunsker, I can see you. Kyle's in the way.
Mr. Chairman, my question will be to you. not up here.
Okay. Are we done with Rose then?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gone last meeting, Mr. Chairman, and I'm just, maybe you can clear up my thinking on this, but Bill Draft 143, if I read it correctly, the school district is not required to have a restraint and seclusion policy, but 269, they are required to have one. Why? What was the discussion on that last time? Why would one have and the other one not?
Well, I'm not going to speak for other people, but I recollect it as the discussion was, that was kind of the concern that we have was, I was two trains of thought, is that we should recommend that the schools do have a policy on this, but there is really no penalty if they don't. I mean, they've got a reporting requirement and they have it, but there's nothing that really says that you will do this or what, you know, and that was kind of, it's important, I think, that we believe that schools should have a policy, so it's a statement of a strong intent that you should have one. And if that's enough to do it or not, I guess that was the train of thought of that. So, I mean, and that was a bill, the second bill, the 01 version, was one that came up in discussion, and we thought we'd just draft it up there. The reason for that is that if we want to proceed with either one of these, we have to have it done in two meetings. So it was that was the train of thought for that. So
thank you.
Welcome. I guess, is there any other, Senator Heckman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess as part of this committee and also in part of the Seclusion and Restraint Task Force, after we get done looking, you know, I think you're going to take comments by interested persons, but I would be interested to offer these 8 agreements as amendments to one of the bills going forward, because I think they're important discussion items going into the legislative session. I tried to remind the task force that as legislation is introduced and how it comes out at the other end is two different things. So knowing that there may be 29 agreements by the time we get done, or there may be 1 agreement by the time we get done. But I think it's important that we, you know, we've had a number of stakeholders in these meetings, and the support for these 8 items is there, and the stakeholders are concerned, whether it's people that work with students, for students, with families, who supervise, who administer schools, who teach in the schools, who are parents of children, or who work as an ancillary service, some kind, with a counseling or whatever. These are the 8 agreements that we came up with, and I think it's important to move them somewhere on one of the bills as we go forward.
Yeah, and I guess with the conversations that I had with you, is that's, you know, what was I recommended to do rather than another bill, so that we could get done today, and that was the suggestion, which is totally fine. But before we get into committee discussion, I'd like to finish up with the public discussion. So is there anybody from the public that would like to comment on these bill drafts?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Anita Thomas with the School Boards Association, and wanted to make a few comments on 143. This bill draft has been before the committee several times, and it still has many of the same issues. If you look first at the definitions, I know Dustin explained where he got them from. There's still a little bit of concern with overreach. For instance, when in the definition of a mechanical restraint, that literally would include everything that would help to hold an individual in a wheelchair. And I don't know that that's exactly what we want to do here. The same thing with seclusion, the involuntary confinement of an individual alone in a room or an area from which the individual is physically prevented from leaving. That could also mean detention. And that's not, again, what we would want to include. So I will leave the definitions there. Our comments really pertain to subsections 2, 3, and 4 of the bill draft. Subsection 2 says that by August 15th, each school district shall report to DPI whether or not it has a policy on restraint and seclusion. If the district has a policy, it has to include a copy. And we would ask why. What's DPI going to do with those policies? On other reports that districts are required to make, they simply check a box on the MISO form indicating that they have a policy. Now, many of the districts put all of their policies right on their websites, and even those that don't, those policies are all open documents, so anybody who wants to have access to them can at any time. Subsection 3 says, before September 11th, any district that has a restraint and seclusion policy has to report to DPI, quote, all incidents of the application of the policy to students during the preceding year. So now, if a district's policy says it will try all possible approaches before using restraint and seclusion, which I think many people would like to see, the district will now have to report not only every instance in which it used a restraint or seclusion, but also every instance in which it applied the policy and used a technique or an intervention other than restraint and seclusion. Now, that's probably not what was intended, but it is what the bill requires. So ask yourself again, what are you going to do with the information? And if you require a report, it ought to be for a purpose, and that brings us to subsection 4 of the bill. DPI is going to report to an interim committee, quote, on the results of the reports under subsection 2. So DPI is going to tell you what? What do you mean by the results of the reports? Do you mean that DPI will tell you how many restraint and seclusion policies districts have? If that's what's intended, then just use the word. Say that's the information that you want. Do you mean that DPI will tell you how many districts actually sent in their policy? That doesn't seem to be particularly helpful. Now, the last phrase of subsection 4 requires the DPI to, quote, identify any school district that has failed to comply with subsection 3. So, in other words, which of the districts that have policies in place failed to report all incidents of the application of their policy? Well, how would DPI determine whether or not a district reported all incidents? Again, the bill draft is not talking just about the use of restraint and seclusion. It's talking about the application of the policy. And finally, if a district doesn't have a policy, it's not required to report anything to DPI other than the fact that it doesn't have a policy. And so while we appreciate the effort behind the bill draft, we respectfully suggest that this not be recommended in its form.
Anita, one question I'd have for you then is, what is the school board's association's feeling about requesting that they suggest that they have policies with no requirements that they do that? I mean, do you have, because we got several of them that require that they should have policies, but we don't require it. But
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you do have a number of places in the Century Code where you require specific policies. The bullying policy, for instance. Yeah. If you have a law that says every school district shall have a policy on a particular subject, we will ensure that every school district has a policy on that. That's a requirement.
And so following that train, did that requirement help in having good policies in our school districts?
Mr. Chairman, we try to ensure that all of the policies that we provide or work on the districts with are good policies and helpful policies and direct the workings of each and every board.
I guess the point I'm looking for is did we accomplish what we were intended to do, that schools, you know, because that's what I'm saying. I mean, we're just suggesting that we require schools to have policies without forcing them. You know, but if we force them, do they just have a vague policy that is as much? I mean, I know the School Board Association has draft policies that are good, but are we seeing these schools having better policies because of these laws?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, most of the policies will come through our office. I'm not aware of very many school districts that sit down and do the amount of work that it takes to create a policy on their own. We provide the templates for many of them, and those are the ones that get enacted.
Senator Obad?
Mr. Chairman and Anita, does the School Boards Association have any opinion on the 8 recommendations that came from the task force? Because I noticed that you're not on the task force.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Robin, that's correct. We did not participate in the task force. I think given the testimony we've provided to this committee, many of the recommendations are perfectly fine with us. You know, we just saw it and would want an opportunity to look at them a little bit more closely if that's permissible. But, you know, in general, we're still talking about the definitions. I just said we have an issue with the definitions. The task force supports schools being required to have a written local policy regarding seclusion and restraint. We would certainly support that they all have policies, not that they are necessarily written locally. What else we got here? The task force supports restraints not being used in a manner that restricts a student's breathing. Again, I mean, on its face, that sounds fine. We would want to have a little bit more discussion with people who are putting these ideas forward and making sure that we all know what they mean and how they could get translated to law or policy.
Mr. Chairman, and Anita, were you, okay. I mean, just because I don't know how this group was put together, were the school boards invited to the table to be a part of this task force? I would think if people are coming forward with recommendations, it would be nice if all parties had been a part of the conversation. Obviously, that doesn't always happen. So I just, were you invited and chose not to participate, or were you not invited to be a part of it?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator O'Ban, we were given the opportunity to be a part of it, but you also have to recognize that as a small office, there are an awful lot of things going on, and unfortunately, sometimes we have to pick and choose. We cannot participate in all of the things to which we are invited.
Representative Kelsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Anita. Of the recommendations by the task force, number 5 kind of leaves a question in my mind. And they said that very likely the active shooter would not be a student, but if they were a student and got choked down, injured, would that put the school district in some kind of jeopardy if they had a policy like this? I mean, you'd be an attorney, and somebody comes in with a pistol because they've been harassed the day before, and somebody notices it and grabs them and chokes them down, or maybe even they terminate their life in that process because it is a dangerous situation. Would that open them up for a lawsuit that otherwise maybe wouldn't?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelsch, I would hope that in the policy creation process that we do look real seriously at a variety of instances for which an exception might be appropriate.
Senator Flackel.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Thomas, to that previous question, wouldn't state law take precedence over school policy in that regard?
In terms of?
Tackle them.
That would certainly take precedent, yes. But it's also a very individualized situation.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other public comment?
Hello.
Morning.
Mr. Chairman. I am Lori Garns. I'm from Minot State University and the North Dakota Center for Persons with Disabilities. I had the honor of serving on this task force. I just wanted to put out a couple of things. I think that there were some really good comments just made, but then I think there's just a little bit of additional information. I just went on my phone and found the key terms and definitions from the U.S. Department of Education in the Civil Rights Data Collection. So these are the actual definitions that the federal government is working, and I think these were the ones that we wanted to include. And so when it talks about mechanical restraint, it says that that would be a restraint such as an adaptive device or a medical support. However, if it's just to help a person be positioned correctly in their wheelchair, if it's to help them from falling out of a situation, it is not considered a mechanical restraint. There's also an additional little caveat that says, does not include behavioral interventions or used as a response to calm and comfort. So The teacher is allowed to still touch the student lightly, to be able to guide them both with a hand on the back. So restraint is really meaning to be identified as holding somebody against their will. So I think that the definitions are very important, and I would like to see those exceptions made. The active shooter situation, I think that's, again, where those definitions really do make a difference. But the bottom line is, even in the best practices of using CPI or any of the other kinds of restraint and seclusion methods, is always has the caveat, in an emergency, you do what you need to do to keep people safe. Even if it isn't exactly the procedure that we wish could happen. So, for example, a kid is running towards the street and going to get hit by a car. We're not going to take the time to try to talk them out of it or any of those kinds of things. Somebody's going to run, grab the child physically, probably in the not the most delicate manner, and put them in a safe place. And then we're going to work on talking it through and making sure it doesn't happen again. So I would respectfully ask all of you to keep those things in mind as you're talking. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up is, as a member of the task force, I noticed that there were people that thought that restraint was something that it's not. So we had one committee member, in all sincerity, say, gosh, we kept a kid in from recess because he didn't finish whatever he was supposed to do at school. Is that a restraint? And the answer is no. No, that's not a restraint. But if there are people, professionals, qualified professionals across the state who accidentally think that they've crossed that line, I think that's a problem, and that they really do need to have good information. So whether it's a policy or a set of definitions for clarity, I think it's important to do something so that people understand what to do. So thank you.
Representative Nathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Lori, or even Senator Heckman, too, in regards to the bill. How does this pertain to school buses when we have unruly kids, and sometimes that can get pretty nasty on there? So how would this bill work with a school bus situation?
The fact of the matter is, there has to be somebody there that can do a restraint, and if the only adult on the bus is a driver, then there aren't going to be restraints happening, right?
Well, if the bus driver could pull over, just pretty nasty, restrain the kid and wait for help, I guess. Maybe Senator Heckman has a better...
Maybe.
Senator Heckman.
Are you looking at who's qualified to do restraint, or can they do one on a bus, or whatever?
Yeah, can they do it on the bus? Would this bill pertain to a bus driver that pulled over that had an unruly kid?
Certainly, if it's school time, sure. A bus is part of your school property, you know. Every other policy that you have in school pertains to children on buses, don't they? If they're...
You're saying buses are part of school property?
Well,
because we have some private buses at school that bus.
Oh,
kids.
Okay. Yeah. Well, not in my area. So.
Yeah.
Sorry
about that. Yeah. I'm not an expert either, Senator, but I just know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just curious how that would pertain then to a private bus and their driver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nathy. That's an excellent question. I drive a school bus in Fargo. And it has always been our policy that the bus is an extension of school property, and all policies apply. I know as we are a contractor, we're not, employees of the school district. We would certainly be interested in who's going to provide the training and who's going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a consideration I know we would have at Valley Bus.
Chairman and Representative, I would agree. The training needs to be high quality, and it needs to be available to everyone that needs it, and clearly that's expensive.
Representative Johnson.
We do, we run probably about 60 special needs buses, so those children's parents have applied for that kind of transportation. There's a few buses, large buses, we call them energy savers. I don't know why, because it gets 5 miles to the gallon, but I drive one of those. I have the fortune of having wonderful kids, many of us do, and good disciplinarians such as me, you know, control that behavior. I would never think of restraining a kid where we are trained otherwise mm-hmm. on the big buses. The smaller buses have aids, mm-hmm. and it would be the aide and the driver that both need the restraint and seclusion training, I would think.
Chairman and representative, I would agree with you. Coming from a special ed background, I do think of things the way that you're thinking of them. But we should have a plan in place for the child who has a disability. The school has already hopefully written an individualized education plan or an IEP that would include time on the school bus, in the lunchroom, out at the recess, after school events, and all day during the school. I mean, that's what the IEP is designed to cover. And so if you already think that you're going to need seclusion or restraint, or you have had to use seclusion and restraint in the past, that team should be getting together and writing an individualized plan for that particular child, because things are not average in that situation, right?
Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That brings a thought to mind. When we were working on this, the special ed directors that were present felt that instead of saying in number three, task force support seclusion and restraint policies being developed at the local level, they would like to have the word procedures instead of policies. And when we ended up, they supported, that they were in consensus with us that to remain it as policy, because that's what school boards do. The board develops a policy, and then from there on, whether it's special ed unit or whoever, develops procedures from there. But that conversation did come up, and I was going to mention that before I forgot about it. But yeah, and I would gather right now that you do have a policy and procedure on your buses to use in case that there's an incident with a child.
Yep. Representative Johnson.
Yep. We have. I'm not sure what we have. I'll check that, because I haven't driven a small bus in a long, long time. As an aide one time, I did have to, mm-hmm. I had to sit next to a little fellow who had some problems, and he started slapping me. Mm-hmm. And I did have to hold his hands down, because he was slapping other kids, and he was slapping me. And, well, guess what? Call from the parent. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to hold his hands when he's hitting people. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. So there would have to be some clarification, and I think I'll check on that.
And Mr. Chairman, I think, you know, we came up on this when we were working in the group too. Not everybody is aware what their own policies were. You know, we found that out right away. What is your policy on this? Well, we don't have a policy. And then someone else said, yeah, we have a policy on this. So I think it behooves us to, whether we're talking about school boards or we're talking about whatever else, to know what our policies are. And if we can't follow them, why can't we follow them? What's wrong with it? Does it need to be rewritten? So we've had just some great discussions, and it's been, I can't say you call a seclusion and restraint task force wonderful, but we really have had an opportunity to listen to all aspects. And we tried to cover all the questions. What if this? What if that? Does this pertain to this? Does this pertain to that? We didn't discuss a lot about school buses. So, yeah.
Any other questions for Lori? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments?
Good morning. My name is Elroy Berkeley. I'm Executive Director of the North Dakota Small Organized Schools. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for a couple of minutes here. The first thing that came to my mind as a former superintendent was data collection is important. It is. And I'll give you an example. At one of the schools I was at a fall-in service, they said we only had one bullying incident. Well, as the conversation lent itself, we had numerous bullying incidences that never made it to the superintendent's office. In other words, staff take care of it, It's not recorded in PowerSchool because staff take care of it. So data collection is important. I'm never going to argue against that. But one thing I'm going to say, you're going to have some very subjective opinions as your definition. So you're really going to have to make it very clear. And then this needs to go back to your boards. It needs to go back to the individual teachers. And I'm glad the topic came up about bus drivers. I'm going to go one step further. Coaches. You have a lot of lay people out here in North Dakota that coach. They have no background, pedagogy, or any of that type of training with working with kids. We have policies, and it is true. Not everybody knows the policies. And it's one thing nice, I'm not employed by any school district, so I can eat some crow here now. I don't remember all my policies. There's no way you can. School Board Association provides us with excellent examples for us to follow. But if you were to quiz me today, Elroy, what did you have under Mott Regent for seclusion? I can't answer it. What did you have at Napoleon? I can't answer it. They need to be accessible. But the people need to be trained, whether it be your administration, your teachers, your paraprofessionals, even custodians can be placed in a situation that's uncomfortable. If you've ever had two students fighting and there's no teachers around, you expect your ancillary staff to take care of the fight. You don't need them to come into your office and say, I didn't do it because I was feared of getting sued. Situational can be written in law, but situation doesn't protect that employee from any parent or lawyer coming in and suing. That's nature. You can be sued for anything. I'm getting a little emotional, but I'm trying to give you some just a little more background information. Again, I support data. You need it. Do we have a problem? Where is it at? Now, as far as OCR, if you've ever filled out one of those forms, they're very time intense. For a small school, too much time, too much intensity. The data can be good, but like it was shared, that data is overwhelming. And what are you going to do with the data, and how are you going to use it? The only other thing that I have is on your proposed, and I'm new to this, so you're going to have to bear with me. I believe it was 0269, is that the way I say it right? Okay, help. Thanks for your help. Specifically starting on line 10, shall provide periodic reports to the school board of the district regarding the number of incidences. Most of my career has been with small schools. I'm worried about FERPA. You have one child that made a mistake or due to a defined disability acts up in school, and now by this I'm to report it to the school board. I can guarantee you with my experiences, I'll have this. Yeah, that was so-and-so, remember the day. It's going to be more than what you want. You want the data, but please somehow consider writing something that does not embarrass that child or embarrasses the family or even the teacher or the person that tried to assist the child. This isn't only special education or children with disability. The way I'm reading these two proposals, it's all students. It's all students. Kids have a bad day. Not defending their actions by any means. But I don't know if you can go into executive session on this. I'm just throwing out ideas. I've been one that always said, if you bring up an issue, hopefully you have a suggestion. But you don't want the data to be crimpled either. It's data is important. So those are just my thoughts. Thank you for your time. I'm open to any questions that you may have.
Senator Flackel.
Mr. Chairman Elroy, kind of break format here, but I believe you can go into executive session, but the 1,000 bill or the 1,000 version of 269 on line 11, it says about the number of them. It doesn't necessarily require a lot of granular detail on that. I've been on a board. I was on a board for, I don't know, 8-9 years where they would tell us, we had this type, you know, this many of this type, this many of that type, but we never knew who the child or adult was. My question is, and I'll have Anita come up here later on that other part, but I had a superintendent tell me, and this made some sense to me, so I want to get it out in the interim. You know, we kind of keep getting things like, well, we should have training in this, we should have training in that. I mean, I was one of the sponsors of the bullying bill. I mean, that's, you know, he suggested that maybe, you know, this would be kind of like when we bundled mills. So you have like 12 bundled mills. that maybe we should bundle, pick a number, whatever amount of time that the schools can use as they so choose, because maybe they need something. Maybe for them it's autism, because they're a small school, but they have a higher preponderance of children with the autism, whether it's more severe or something. So if you could roll that back to some of your schools, and we could maybe have that discussion during the session to see if that's something we should look to change, and this allows the other members to think about it and take it back home. But again, it's kind of, they can customize it toward what they need as opposed to us mandating something to them that they are really strong in right now, but shorting them on another area that they would really like to get into. So I think my only question is, could you do that?
Senator Scheib with Senator Placco. I can give you my opinion what I would take to small organized schools. I'll support it as their executive director. We have times when we need to be reactionary. I hate to use that term, but there are times that it has to be. Suicides can pop up. Boom. You got to be reactionary. You hope that your in-service over time is responsive to take care of things. But look at the drug abuse that's going on in certain school districts. I don't see a problem with it. I think school districts would welcome that. And I'll just speak on behalf of North Coast Small Organized Schools. Yes, we would support it. I don't see any problem. Going back to your initial one, with all due respect, I'm from very small schools. They'll know who the kid is before you even bring it up. So, I mean, that's just my only concern is try to protect that. That's all I'm trying to say. You know, I understand what you're saying, too.
Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Berkley, when you talked about the time required to fill out an OCR report, isn't that already a requirement?
Not directly. I'll give an example at Mott Regent. I helped them out last school year, and I got the report. Well, I'm a new superintendent trying to dig up the information. It doesn't correlate with PowerSchool. I can't dump it. I mean, that's what's frustrating. You can have all this data in your PowerSchool, but it doesn't dump. So you end up going over everything.
So then those schools don't report to OCR then?
No, you have to. But your data, okay, I'm going to eat crow, your data is not going to be clean. It's going to be dirty data. And you get to
that.
By that, it means you put in your answers based upon your best knowledge and understanding of your school district, mm-hmm. but it may not be exactly what you want or exactly what they need. I'm going to go back to my other example earlier when I talked about at one school. I said, hey, we don't have any bullying problems. We don't have one issue. If it doesn't get reported, your data's dirty. You know, that's the other thing that can happen with this. So that's where it goes back to the in-service, to your teachers, to your bus drivers. I mean, you guys are on probably more risk than a lot of us because you're, you know, mom and dad had a bad night, those kids are going to vent out first thing on the bus. But that's data that isn't reported because it's in the school time sometimes. So you have a lot of subjectivity. Let me just put it a closure to that. A lot of subjectivity. So,
Representative Nathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Elroy, one quick question. I don't see your name on the task force of people that were involved. Were you guys invited?
I have to plead ignorance because, you know, with the transition, I'm still learning, Senator Shively, Chair, and Representative Napier. I don't know if Mr. Tollefson was asked, and that's not an issue with me. My opinion is if I'm asked, I'm always willing to, if there's a time constraint, like Anita said, with the School Board Association. The other thing is I look at it like this. It's my responsibility to share concerns at these hearings.
Sure. Okay.
So
thank you.
That's my opinion. Yep. I don't make an issue of it.
Okay.
So.
See no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Any other comments? Not, I believe Senator Flacco wanted Anita to come back up.
Ms. Thomas, we've had this discussion, so no surprise to you, but can you reference the executive session? Are they able to go into executive session to discuss specific areas related to what we've been talking about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flacco, when there are educational records being discussed, the answer is yes, the school board can go into executive session.
Okay. No other public comment? Okay. Committee, what's your wishes with these bills? And I mean, we have the choices. Like you said, we have amendments. You can vote up and down on either one of these bills. I mean, my personal opinion is the information, I think, is the important part, not the bill drafts that we submit or we don't submit. I mean, to me, it's the information we gather and the information we pass on to the rest of the body is what I feel is our job. But if we have a bill or don't have a bill is totally up to the committee. Representative Nathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, along those lines, I've always thought interim committees kick out too many bills anyways. And I think from what the discussion we've had, especially on 143, as hard as the task force worked at, I think there's still, for me, some unanswered questions, things that we need to take a look at. We've heard some of the concerns and issues from the school board, all the way from the buses, the coaches, to the small schools. Input, not to say that I'm either for or against the bill, but I think this is a, I think both bills should have no recommendation and let the sponsors keep doing their work on it. And I'm sure both sponsors will file the bill at that time. So I just have more time to work on it. But I think the, excuse me. So I guess Mr. Chairman, along those lines, I would agree with you. I don't think either one deserves a recommendation, knowing full well that, again, both sponsors will be keep working on this issue, and we'll see these issues at the session. This is a long way from ending. So
certainly should not stop anybody that wants to make a motion for these bills or not. It's fine. I mean, that's why we have the committee to discuss it. So with the lack of enthusiasm, I'm guessing that we have...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kelch.
I think we've ended up with more questions on this issue than we have answers by a long ways. More questions than we had at the beginning. And as we go through it, the issue becomes more difficult to understand, and there are so many caveats that could happen, could not happen. I guess I would make a motion that we do not forward either of these bills. Or do you need them one at a time?
Can't do that.
Just leave it. We don't need a motion to not accept a bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just in my days on school board, and that's kind of what I thought. I think these are all good points, even the task force points. I think those are very good. What makes them difficult for me to put in a bill or a draft is that every school district is so unique, and the things that happen are so different. I mean, as Senator Flackel added with the training part, if you're going to put money to it, I agree with that wholly, but I think that the training on some school districts need is totally different than other school districts. And I think school boards should have policies on this, and I think they should be, like it was mentioned, you should know your own policies and you should follow them, and that's usually what gets school boards in troubles. But I mean, if school boards aren't doing their job, I just don't see laws that make them do their job as a lot of help. So, I mean, but that's my thought of this. But I mean, if somebody wants to pursue this, that's fine. Senator Heckerman.
Well, I certainly hope that as the session begins that we see something in the form of a bill and that addresses the eight agreements that the task force brought forward, because the task force was made up of a large number of stakeholders across the state. Going back to Representative Kelsch's statement, we have spent 30-some hours working on these recommendations, and we came out with consensus. Consensus, when you have 40-some people, some being at meetings and some not, and some emailing ideas and some not, I think that was pretty amazing. When you have that number of hours of work and this agreement on these eight supports that we brought forward here, and I guess I'm really disappointed that we're not bringing something forward to even start, but I'm guessing there's going to be something.
Yeah, and I'm sure there is, too. Representative Kelsch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly did not mean to criticize the task force work. I guess it's probably criticism of myself that I thought this was a much easier or simpler problem than it has turned out to be. And I think there's still a lot of questions that I don't see answered. And I think the task force is going to meet again. They'll clarify some things some more. That'll help we're back during the session.
Representative Zuki.
Mr. Chairman, I guess not to throw, maybe to throw a little light on this subject, but having been all the way through this now, I'm still not sure if all of those times that I had to sit on the steps on the school bus, if I was actually secluded and restrained. So, thank you.
Maybe it wasn't long enough is what I'm thinking. So.
My personal experience.
Yeah. Okay, committee, unless there's anything else on this item, Representative Kelsch. Okay. Yeah, so we have a couple things we have to do. We have to have a motion to prepare reports and conclude our business, and then we also have to sign EDI.
So moved.
One at a time.
Well, can't do them all at once?
No. Do B first.
What do I use?
B. That's the one after A.
Did he say it was me?
Yeah. Make that motion.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that the chairman and legislative council staff be requested to prepare a report and the bill drafts recommended by the committee and to present the report and recommended bill drafts to legislative management.
Okay. We have no bill drafts, so that's what we do have. Yeah. Yes, we do. Okay. So does everybody understand the motion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carried. Nope.
Mr. Chairman.
Only if we... Representative Kelsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we adjourn sine die, at the end of the last session, there were some comments made on the conference committee report on primary and secondary education by a couple members of the assembly that there needed to be some changes made in the formula to make it a little fairer to smaller schools that are up against their ability to tax. And one of the more prominent members of the majority party promised that that would happen during the session, and it hasn't. And I'm just a little concerned about that. We should have been discussing that because there's, under the formula, if you are up against and you're losing students, you're up against your cap on real estate taxes, and you lose some students, which happens in these rural areas quite often, they're really in a bind. And we haven't done anything to adjust that. And I'm a little concerned about that at this point, that we haven't done anything to try to remedy that situation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Reviewing our directives that we had, I looked at them today again. I didn't, nothing about the funding formula was in our directives to study, so I guess that's one reason it did. But I mean, it's a constant battle of small schools declining enrollment to taxes and the payments. I mean, we got a funding formula that's based on enrollment, and when that declines, it's pretty hard to, we already hold them harmless in that. So, but yeah, but I guess that's a discussion that we will have coming up in January. So, but any other comments? No, we need one more motion. Well, Representative Sanford.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your leadership and the work that goes into the organizing these agendas, and appreciate your work on that.
Thank you for tolerating me. I appreciate that. So, now let's see.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we do a voice vote that the committee be adjourned sine die.
Okay. We have a motion and second to sine die. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.